The Last of a Driver Breed podcast is brought to you by DaftonClassic.com. Because I daily drive my 1970 Westfalia, I know the difference between parts that will work and parts that are truly reliable. I started Dafton Classic to help those who drive classic Volkswagens get access to top quality parts for their daily drivers, their show-winning restoration projects, and everything in between. With locations in both Los Angeles, California, and Salem, Oregon, we are able to serve the VW community across the entire planet with personalized service and up-to-date technical advice that accounts for classic car ownership in the modern world. Visit us at www.daftonclassic.com. But it's not really it's not a formal thing.
All right.
It's really just like the first episode. Don't want to pinch that. You know, I just sat down just like this in a Cliff Creek's backyard.
I'm that inside the bug for right now if you want. I was just out here reading it. I hadn't had a chance.
But just like with the flashlight.
Oh, yeah.
Before it goes to L.A.
Yeah, I'll get it back.
Mr. Cormack.
Hi.
Merry, you know, happy New Year.
Merry syphilis Christmas. And a happy gonorrhea. No, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Let's hope 2021 is better than 2020. What scares me is now that it's 21, it's legal to drink. Oh, dear.
Oh, wow. I got nothing for that. That's a good one. So, the theme of the podcast, just to be clear, is supposed to be interviewing people who daily drive classic cars and trying to figure out what a classic is. Because that timeline seems to be rolling forward. We're kind of at the point where I just drove a 88 Camry, and my peers were like, yeah, that's like a classic wagon. But your generation probably wouldn't look at a 1988 Toyota and be like, oh, yeah, that's a classic car.
Yeah, you know, probably not. And as the older my generation gets, you know, our cars that we grew up with, like these two, the 57 Bugs here, those are, to me, classics. Now, to somebody your age, yeah, they're more of an antique, you know.
The 50s are...
They're, you know, and I mean, even to me, you know, the thing's 60-something years old. You know, so, yeah, they're old, but... To me, a classic is in the eyes of the beholder. Now, you want to tell me a brand new, can't tell the difference between a real one and an inner mechanic, a speedster, unless you take a magnet to the body. You want to tell me that speedster isn't a classic? It's a 2019, buddy. Is it a classic? Sure. Is the new Hellcat Charger a classic? If it runs 10s out of the box from the factory, if it isn't a classic now, it's going to be. I mean, it's instant collectible. So that's what I'd say. Whether anybody thinks your car's a classic or not, shouldn't matter to you. Do you like it? Do you think it's a classic? If you think it is, well, then fine, it is. And does anybody else really matter but you?
So if someone were to come and tell you that the sort of late 2000s Prius, but the very first Prius. If someone came to you and said a Prius is a classic car because they got it in 97 and we're coming up on 25 years and that classifies as a classic collectible car in a state like Nevada where you get classic rod plates. Imagine, could you stomach classic rod plates on a Prius?
Would I do it? No. But I understand the guy that bought it brand new in 97 considering it a classic. Would I? Not in a million years.
Fair enough.
But then again, I'm old school, you know. I mean, you got to remember, I grew up with 64 Ford Fairlanes and split window Corvettes and oval window Bugs and stuff like that. So I'm old school on that stuff. Mm-hmm. So while I don't know if your Corolla wagon would be a classic to me. But if it was to you, great.
Because 5 years ago, I wouldn't have said that. But I mean, I'm having just turned 30 this year. It's like, oh crap!
Jeez, I'm going to try to remember back that far. 30. Oh yeah. Oh boy. Yeah. Never mind.
So, in keeping with the theme, I mean, you don't daily drive these two bugs, but you were an editor at VW Trends,
right?
Editor at Hot VWs,
right?
I know of your tenure at Volks America, so you've driven Volkswagens through the decades.
My first brand new one, I got off the showroom floor. Our neighbor, Hal Sankey, owned Crest Motors in Escondido, California, which was the VW dealership. And in 1969, when I graduated high school, I marched right down there and paid $1,800 for a red with black interior 69 bug. That was the first one I could ever really call my own. I'd worked on other ones before that, but they were friends of mine. It wasn't mine. Mine was the brand new one. I don't have the VIN number, but if I ever find California black plate Zulu Quincy Sam 624, I don't care if it's been rolled. I don't care if it's been convertibled. I don't care if it's been Baja'd. I want it back. Now, that, to me, would be a classic car because it's my first, well, my only brand new VW other than the wife's Jetta, which doesn't count.
Take or leave it.
Yeah.
And how many Volkswagens have you owned?
Oh, boy. How much time do you have?
I got all the time in the world. I'm driving a VW bus back to L.A. I got nothing but time.
I'm going to say over 200. I had 11 at one time at my best or worst, depending on how you look at it. I say at my best. My other half may not, you know, feel the same way. But I had 11 of them running, registered, and insured. When I was in Escondido, I actually had a code enforcement officer for the city come by, and I was in the middle of putting a clutch in my 60 convertible. It was a Euro with semaphores in the rear quarter panels.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks around and he goes, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm finishing up putting the pressure plate bolts on this. As soon as I get another throwout bearing on the trans, I've got to put the engine back in." And he goes, "You can't be doing that here." Yeah, and then I kind of gave him a quizzical look and went, why? And he goes, "You're running a shop here. Look at all these cars." And I said, "But they're all mine." And he goes, no, you don't do that to me, kid. You're running a shop here." So I said, "Sir, hang on a second. Have a seat here." And I ran inside and I got the titles, the insurance, and the registration for all 11 cars. And I threw them on the driver's seat of all of them and said, "We can go for a ride in 10 of these right now if you want. The 11th one, the convertible, you still got to give me an hour, hour and a half before we take a ride in that one." And he did. He looked at all the registrations and all the titles, and they were all in my name. And he goes, "Well, you still should have a shop down in the auto park," and walked away.
But you weren't running a shop. You were just fixing your cars.
It was my own cars. I was keeping my collection maintained. So there was really nothing he could do. He wasn't happy about it. He thought he'd found himself a good one.
Mm-hmm.
No, not a legal beagle. You know, and I had a big 6-foot solid wood fence. There was no way the neighbors could see in the backyard. And they didn't care because I was always forever fixing their lawnmowers, their weed eaters, you know, doing plumbing for the old lady next door, you know, just.
So you were running a shop out of your garage, just a 2-stroke shop.
Sometimes, you know, sometimes or their lawnmower had quit running. I'd replace the fuel line or something. So they didn't care. So I don't think I was turned in. I think this code enforcement guy just happened to drive by and saw all those and went, ugh.
Looking for a quota.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for looking for something to do.
Yeah. Well, guess what, code enforcement officer? Keep looking. So, yeah, I'd say I've had over 200. They were easy to work on. They were cheap. Parts were cheap. And, yeah, I learned from the idiot book. I admit it, you know. And one story that's kind of funny is the first time I ever pulled a VW engine, I was in the Air Force. A friend of mine had a 62 bug with the 40 horse, probably looking back, number matching. And we needed to put a clutch in it. Okay, well, every car I had ever worked on in my life, the engine came out the top. Deck lid.
On a Beetle?
No, every other car I had worked on before.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
Chevy, sure. Ford, Plymouth, yeah. Came out the top. The deck lid, the fan shroud, the alternator generator, the intake manifold, the entire exhaust system, including the heater boxes, all the tin around that I could get to. And I have my hands, I had the valve covers off, and I had my hands around the rocker shafts. And I am trying to pull this engine up out of the car. It won't frickin' go. And my hands are bloody, and they're turning into hamburger, and I'm getting annoyed. And a guy comes up and goes, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I'm trying to get this engine out of this car." And he goes, "Get out of the way." And he literally kind of pushed me out of the way, grabs the engine, yanks it straight back. It drops on the ground. He picks up on the bumper. The only thing he had to clear was the oil cooler because I had everything else off already. Mm-hmm. And he goes, "There. Now, once you get the clutch on, go buy a gasket set, and I'll watch you put all the shit back on that you didn't have to take off in the first place." Oh. Oh. And that's how I learned how to pull a VW engine.
So what were you working on before the Volkswagens, then, if you were pulling engines off the top
Mopars.
Of
Mopars. Oh, the
Tell
sun.
Tell me about the Mopars.
Sun, rose, and set in a Mopars fanny. If you didn't have a Hemi, you weren't nothing. Well, I had a Hemi Roadrunner, and my friend Jim Nickel had a Hemi Cuda. And we had taken off those horrible Carter AFB four-barrel carbs that we didn't know how to work on and put Hollies on it. And we had put Doug's headers on it way before they become Doug Thorley headers. This is 1970. Mm-hmm. And the traction bars, you know, the ladder bars that went clear up towards the bell housing up by the rear mount for the front fender. And we were at Orange County Raceway, and we're doing jet changes and trying to get the Hollies to behave right. We're pulling plugs and looking and saying, "Okay, yeah, we're pretty close. Fatten up just one more size." And so he's sitting there at the starting line, and here comes this little orange bug. The pinching bug or the pinchy bug, something like that.
Sure.
And I mean, it sounds angry. It doesn't sound like any VW I knew about, but it was a VW. And I thought, well, it's bracket racing. They're going to have to let that little bug go at least halfway down the track to, you know, make it even. Well, the tree came down even. And I'm watching going, "Yeah, well, nice try, guy." Light comes on the tower side for the bug. Now, I got to tell you, the Cuda was catching up fast. If it had been a 1,500-mile quarter mile or 1,500-foot quarter mile, I think the Cuda would have got it because there is no replacement for displacement. I get that. But the bug won.
And this was the inch pincher.
Yes, this was absolutely the inch pincher with Daryl driving. And I didn't even go see Jim. I stormed into the pits. And as this guy, Daryl, this long, dark-haired guy, Daryl, was getting out and taking his helmet off, I go, "What do you have in this car?" And I was angry. I was hurt. I was tired. I was greasy. I'd been burned by the spark plugs. You know, I mean, it was just in this little damn bug just beat the Cuda. And he goes, "It's a VW engine." And I said, "Recycled bull food. BS." And he goes, calm down, guy. And I was just an irate hippie. And so he pulls the deck lid pins and he takes the deck lid off, and I look, and it doesn't have that black shroudy thing that I'm used to, and it has carburetors on each side. But good God almighty, it's a Volkswagen engine. Now, you can mess up a small block Chevy and make it faster. You do that with 91 cubic inches, now you have my attention. And that's kind of how it all started. And then my Roadrunner, I was in the Air Force, and that was about the time of odd even gas rationing, where you could only get gasoline on every other day. And that Roadrunner got about 6 miles to the gallon. Probably would have done better if I'd kept my foot out of it, but what's the fun in that? I was living 60 miles off base. I couldn't go on a full tank of gas for 2 days. I would have made it. I didn't want to try, because if you're late for the Air Force, that's AWOL. That's different than late for work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I sold it and bought a brand new, must have been 69 bug. Yeah, that's when I got my 69.
Just as a commuter, and you couldn't keep your hands off the engine.
Well, yeah, kind of. The first thing I did was, I didn't realize that these little engines, you have to keep them wound up. You know, you don't dare lug them. Well, I didn't learn that until I'd pulled out the studs on the 3-4 side. And the H cases for the 69s, they were a little...
They have a reputation now of being not the ones you want to bore out, because they're a little soft.
Yeah, and the studs, they did have a little bit of a habit of pulling out. Well, me flooring it at 25 and fourth all the time. Yeah, it was, you know, and it finally just pulled the studs out. And that's how I learned about case savers. And, you know, when they say nothing less than 1,000 RPM, they mean it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So.
Yeah, because that's the, I mean, VW people now, the first thing people talk about is, I'm going to get a freeway flyer so I can, because it sounds noisy and it sounds this and... Sounds like it's revenue. I mean, Wasserbox, but like, I'm just having this conversation with my dad on. He's got my panel van again. It's a 2.1, but I tell him, like, no, wind it out. Wind it up, get it to like 4,500 RPM, then shift, and then just cruise it at what sounds like 3,500. And he's like, I can't do it. Now he's why I'm a Mopar guy. We grew up with Ram Charger, and I learned to drive. I mean, third gen Hemi. First thing I drove was a Hemi, and you know that's totally different mentality.
But they shift at 3,000 unless you stick your foot in it. Mm-hmm. You can't do that to these; they will overheat. I saw a study, and I don't remember who it was. It might have even been Volkswagen. What pushes the most air with a stock VW doghouse fan? At what RPM?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was like 2,300. I think it was 2,300. Any more than that, you were just kind of spitting into the wind.
Far be it for me to disagree.
I don't know.
My best understanding is about 2,800 RPM.
Okay. Well,
I don't have the test equipment. This is just stuff.
Yeah, I don't either. I would love to find that study again. Check the credentials of who did it, how they measured it, and with what, before I go out on a limb and say, oh, yes, world, 2,300 is the magic number. I don't know that. Now, okay, you hear me, Internet? I don't know.
All I can provide is the anecdotal evidence.
Yeah.
Is, you know, since I put a tack in the bug and I've got a tack in this, I mean, high roof bus, cruising speed at 60 miles an hour is 3,500 RPM. My driveway got to 126 degrees this past summer. Didn't overheat. Mm-hmm. And it's 776, it's 8.5 to 1 compression, and it's pushing a box with the box on top.
Yeah,
it's not aerodynamic.
Like I said, it's got all the aerodynamics of a refrigerator.
Right. But it would not overheat, and I attribute that to the gearing being just right for what that buzz is. And I don't know what it is, but it is geared
low. Guys that'll try to put a 2180 in their car with a split case trans, you know, or the worst one I used to see is an oval bug. Guy's got a 2180, 2110 dual Delortos or Webers, and he's got stock brakes all the way around. And I asked them, so how fast do you think this thing will go? And they go, oh, it'll bury the speedometer, the 80-mile-an-hour speedometer in third gear. So you think over 100 miles an hour? And, oh, yeah. Okay. So, and you've got what, 55-mile-an-hour brakes? Well, yeah. So there's 45 miles an hour of smack that you're not worried about? Well, I guess I maybe should be. I make them stop. Then I make them go. That's how I got to be an old guy.
Is that your relationship with Kevin Zagar?
I've known Kevin for...
'Cause I just met him a year ago down one of the Euro shows in San Diego. And he's got some cool stuff, and he's got some really nice stuff coming out.
He does. He is now building next level stuff. Yes, Kevin, I said it. Kevin and I used to butt heads. We weren't enemies by any stretch, but we tried to get each other every chance we got. We were pretty fierce competitors. And I had my 21 window bus, and he had his 23. And I'd give him trouble. Oh, not the one that's up in Coos Bay now. Not that one. Oh, his old two-tone green one? Yeah, it's up in Coos Bay now. And but he had this chestnut brown sealing wax red 23 window that had been smacked up in the right front. And he always put a surfboard there to hide it. So whenever we'd go to Pomona or something, I'd go, hey, what's behind the surfboard? And just give him trouble. At my 21 window, the bottom of the walk-through seat stands used to have yellow shag on them when I got it. Well, I got most of it out, but there were still a few hairs left. And he'd go, well, if I do that, you're going to show off the yellow shag? You know, so we would just needle each other. And I lost contact with him pretty much when I moved up here. We were both in a bus club called Strictly Vintage Twos that was in San Diego. And we see each other, but I moved up here in 2005 and kind of lost track of him. I was at a drag day in probably 2014, I'm going to say. And I'm looking at this chassis with an unequal length A-arm front end and some really high-level looking stuff for the front end. And I look up and, damn, that's Kevin. What are you doing with this stuff? You don't know what to do. And he goes, well, this is my company now. I have Cool Rides Customs. And I didn't know. He had been working with Ian Kirkland at Mendiola Transmissions and Suspensions. Well, he went out on his own and started Cool Rides Customs, and I've got a Cool Rides Customs shifter in that silver car right over there. I personally, and it's not Kevin's deal, it's mine. I still have a problem going from third to second with that one. But is it as good as the Berg shifter? I think so. My personal opinion. And I didn't think anything would ever compare to a Berg. But I stand corrected. That one, once I get more used to that one, that 3-2 downshift.
Just to be clear, this isn't a commercial for Cool Rides.
No, not at all.
I just happened to run, but the very first episode kind of gave him a shout out because, again, Cliff Crate with one of his was an All-State trailer. But Kevin just started reproducing the brackets. Mm-hmm. You know, like he's picking up these things that no one else is reproducing. He's just reproducing them, and that's super cool.
Mm-hmm.
Not an endorsement by any means. Not getting paid to say that, but
Kevin, you can kiss my rosy. No, never mind.
But no, I like Kevin. My short time with him, he's friendly and willing to talk and explain.
Like I say, when I first met him, He was not the Kevin that he is now. Of course, I probably wasn't the Dave that I am now either. So, but we get along great now. He came up here with his partner, Danny Cisneros. I found a 54 bug Baja down in Willow Creek outside of Eureka. And I kept looking and looking and finally went, boy, that sunroof is big. And it was a threefold sunroof, had the rib doors, good pan, four tab flat hood and everything. So I got it, dragged it home. And Kevin came up from San Diego. He had gone to Oregon, got a Semaphore 56. And then he had another car, another oval on the trailer. And then he wanted to get the 54. And I'm looking, going, pal, you got a logistics problems. And he, not if you've got a Sawzall. And he cut one of those ovals up right out there on the front driveway, right before my birthday. It was July 20th. And he's out there just Sawzalling away, cutting it at the heater channels and just cutting one of the oval bodies up. And it all fit. He got all of it back to San Diego. Yeah, that's when it was. So, yeah, he's out there. Well, you got a Sawzall? Yeah, I got a couple. Well, give them here. Watch this. All right. And he had his son with him, Demetrio, I think it was. And his son was, you know, sweeping up the mess, and that was his job. Did a fine job of cleaning up. Mm-hmm. Kevin's training him good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Fun times. My neighbors just kind of peeked out the window, and I went and kind of shrugged, and they just shook their heads, closed the blinds. And by the morning, it was all better and all gone, and it never happened.
As it should be. So you also mentioned Berg. Now, I know your famous Berg story.
Yeah.
How you met Gene Berg.
Yeah. Do you want that one repeated?
Because I tripped over one in a friend's backyard. God, I can't remember the name. But it's the oil cooler that mounts right in front of the fan.
Yes, it was. And this was at a, back in the early 80s, there was a series called Race for the Gold. And it was a VW drag racing thing, kind of like the Fast Four Cartel is now, or Bugarama mm-hmm. Racing Series. And they had come to Carlsbad, and I had a Baja. And I did what everybody at the time had done, and I took a Rapid Cooler or a Hayden Trans Cooler.
Rapid Cooler, that's what it was.
Yeah. And put it back by the, you know, right over the intake for the fan. And so we're sitting there. My buddy Gary Poles elbows me in the stands, and he goes, "Do you see who that is looking at your looking at your Baja Bug?" And I said, "Yeah, it's some old dude wearing a hat and a flannel shirt in the middle of July." Because, you know, Gene was always in a flannel shirt. And he went, "Dude, that's Gene Berg." And I went, "Yeah, okay. You got to go say hi to him, man. He knows everything." So, okay. So I walked down there and I go, "Hello, my name's Dave." And he goes, "I'm Gene." "Hi, this your car?" "Yeah, what size is it?" "1835. I'm surprised he didn't give me crap about the 92s, but he didn't. And he goes, "So how's that oil cooler work?" And I said, "It works excellently. What's your oil temperature?" "I can't get it, even in the summertime here, to go over 200. It just, 190 is about it." And he goes, "Well, that's great. What's your cylinder head temperature?" "Sir, I don't really know." And he goes, "It's probably a good thing you don't, because you're trying to cool off your cylinder heads with preheated air. That is the most effed up place to put an oil cooler I've ever seen." And he walked away. That was it. That was my first meeting with Gene. And I stood there for a second, and I thought about it, and I thought about it, and went, "Oh, wow, you know what? He's got a point." On my way home, I got about a 10-foot length of good oil hose, mm-hmm. put it across over the other side from the starter over by the clutch mounter, the wing nut for the clutch, like 2 days later. Yeah. Good point, Mr. Berg. Thank you. And then I'd seen him over the years, and I asked him if he remembered that, and I don't think he did. I think he had educated so many people that he didn't remember me from anybody.
Yeah, I've heard stories of him stalking Pomona and just looking for things to critique.
When Gene talked, you should listen. He was one of those guys, he's like Fred Simpson with cylinder heads. If Fred decides to talk, shut your mouth and open your ears. Same with Gene. Or Roger Crawford with cylinder heads, or Pat Downs at CB, or any of those guys. If they decide they're going to talk and teach, close your mouth, open your ears, and try to get it all in. Because people like that, you know, we're losing. They're dying away. And one of these days, all that will be gone. I have some tapes, some cassette tapes of a thing I did with VW Trends called 20 Questions with Joe Vitone. And it's me on the phone with Joe talking about, where'd you get your start with all this, Joe? And, you know, where did BRMs come from? And the Impy logo was one of the first known.
Where the borrowing started for VWs, because that was a Pan Am, right?
He was going to Italy, and it was a Pan Am jet. And if you look at the old logo, and you take and you squish it down into an oval and take out P-A-N-A-M and put E-M-P-I, you got it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it came from. And Pan Am's no longer in business, so they can't sue Impy. But that's where that came from.
And Joe was Daryl's son?
No, his dad.
No. Oh, wow.
Joe was Daryl's dad. He was the one that started Impy back in 56. See, he had a motorcycle shop at the time in Stockton, but he was starting to play with VWs. And VW said, oh, yeah, your valve guides are, well, they didn't have valve guides in 36 horses.
Mm-hmm.
So when the valve bore, for lack of a better term, started to wear, which on an aluminum head, didn't take long. VW said, scrap the head, put a new head on it. And Joe thought, well, that's dumb. All the Nortons and all the aerials and everything that I've ever worked on, they have replaceable bronze valve guides. Why don't we make a replaceable bronze valve guide for these heads? And that is where Engineered Motor Products started, EMPI. So that's how they got their start. And then he was offered a dealership. He said he took Riverside over anywhere else because it was closest to Riverside Raceway. And he wanted to be nearby where he could test out all his stuff.
And that was Econo Motors.
Yes. 520 Roberta Street was the actual Impy, but Econo was in the Riverside Auto Mall. And he told me that he would get calls from the dealers in L.A. saying, the Germans are coming. The Germans are coming, because Volkswagen would send over a bunch of guys from Germany to inspect the dealerships. And Joe said, you know, that gave me about 2 hours to get all the GTVs out of the front showroom, hide all the C-stripes and the Sprint Stars and the five spokes.
And, oh, my word.
And he basically had to put all that stuff like way back in the back lot so that by the time the Germans got there, there was nothing but bone stock VWs in the showroom and around the area.
And Joe just passed away. Or was, I'm sorry, was that Daryl?
Yeah, Daryl just passed away. Daryl's been gone for about, oh, probably 6-7 years now.
Daryl was, he passed away. He was at Tectonics.
Yes, up in Sheridan.
Mm-hmm.
He is the one that took a 25-horse cased Karmann Ghia to 151 miles an hour. It can't be done, but that you don't tell Daryl that. That was like, yeah, tell Daryl he can't beat a Hemi Cuda, and let's see what happens.
So much of the VW history was before my time that this is why we're doing this, because I was under the impression that Joe was Daryl's son.
No, no.
But I'm happy to be corrected. I'm less wrong.
I don't think Daryl and Sharon had kids. If I'm not mistaken, they did not. Not that I ever heard. He never mentioned it. But, you know, Colin Guyanis is still running Tectonics up in Sheridan.
I'm going to edit this out, but yeah, I've sold him parts. That was super cool. I met Colin my very first VW show up at Woodburn. Yeah. And that's where VW stuff
Colin
started.
Colin loves gliders. He's into
what
gliders.
That's what he was buying my OEM Volkswagen lifters for.
Yeah.
As far as Volkswagen says, he's right there next to Evergreen.
Oh, by the way, if you know anybody that wants a two-cylinder VW motor, let me know. Case has been cut in half. It's a 78-4 scat crank that has been cut. Half a cam. It's an Stromberg, or I think, updraft carburetor. Everything to build a two-cylinder aircraft motor. It's right here in town.
Why would someone want to cut a four-cylinder in half to fly?
Probably for an experimental aircraft, my guess. Or like an ultralight, maybe.
So just weight savings, fuel economy?
My guess, yeah. I'm not sure, but our local machine shop here, a friend of mine that I used to go to Bonneville with him every year, single-engine Ford, ran 337 on a 348 record, which that's miles per hour. That's moving. And he's not going to be doing it anymore. He finally retired, but yeah, that's where I saw Daryl do his thing.
And this machinist has this two-cylinder VW.
Yes, he does. Just sitting in a pile.
Wow.
So, know anybody that wants it, give me a call later and I'll set you up with the guy.
That's the kind of stuff Cliff would say. That belongs on a shelf, like his Rapid Cool.
Yeah,
belongs on a shelf. The story I got on Rapid Cool and why Gene Berg was so out to get the Rapid Cools was they went to him to test it and to prove that this was going to cool your engine by 15%. Well, it changed the engine temperature by 15%, but it made the cylinder heads run 15% hotter. And so he said, this is no good. Rapid Cool advertised 15% difference in cooling and sold them accordingly.
Well, they were right-ish.
that's just a story. Again, this is well before my time.
Well, I've seen stuff like that where people would say, here, this is the newest, latest, and greatest neat bitchin' thing. Give it a try. And I would go back to him and go, look, and this happened, and I won't mention the name. This thing did not fit. I broke it already, and it did not perform and do what you said it was going to do. Now, I can either take all my data, just print the data in VW Trends, and let the reader figure it out for themselves, or you cannot take this and put it on the market until you address these problems. Well, you can't print that. The hell I can't. It's only libel if you lie. And these are my findings with your muffler bearings, with your piston return springs.
Can't even mention what it was.
No. I don't want to do that.
So not a power pulley then?
No. They fixed it, and I ran a story on it, and all life was good. But the first one they sent me, No, I won't run it, and if I won't run it, I'm not going to tell you to. And, I used to get in fights with the boss over that. Dave, this guy advertises 2 pages of color in the magazine. Do you know how much that is? Yeah, I do. But if it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, smells like a duck, and eats like a duck or a piece of garbage.
It's your job as a journalist to tell people that it's a duck or a piece of garbage.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I know I made some pretty big name advertisers upset with me. But my main allegiance wasn't really to the advertisers, and that's where I ran into trouble with the bosses, is my allegiance was the guy in Timbuktu, Tennessee, who it was either me or J.C. Whitney, you know, and I'm telling them that this thing is the latest and greatest. And if I can't make it work with all of Southern California at my disposal, what chance do they have? And then, okay, let's look at this long term. It's a piece of crap and it didn't work. The guy's going to throw it in the trash. He's going to get mad. He's going to sell his bug and go buy a Toyota or a Honda or a Chevy truck or something. Okay, we've now lost the opportunity to sell parts, magazines, stuff at car shows. We've lost this guy and all the money he was going to spend on this car for a $15 part that didn't work. Was it worth it? My guess would be no. So that's how I managed to get in trouble a lot.
So you started, your first magazine was Trends.
Yes, it was.
How did you get into VW Trends?
Their vintage historical editor, who is still one of my best friends, was Lee Hedges, the Type 3 Ghia guy down in San Diego. He had bought an old deluxe, I think, 64 bus that he called Friedrich. And he wanted to do the brakes. He was actually going to take a drive up the coast to Crescent City just with the family, just to do a drive up the coast. And he did after we were done, and he wrote about it in VW Trends. But he goes, I've never done brakes on these, and I pulled off the front drum, and there's something weird here. There's like two wheel cylinder, you know. He didn't quite get it. And I said, I've done brakes on buses. If you got all the parts, you know, get me at least Brazilian, if not German, wheel cylinders, you know, and all that. So anyway, we did the brakes on his bus, and I go inside his house to wash my hands, and I see these 8x11 manila envelopes, and one said Thing, Tennessee, one said Oval, New Jersey, and then there were a couple of others in the stack, and I, Lee, what are those? And he goes, oh, those are stories that Henry de Kuyper, the editor, wants me to write. And I go, well, you're going to do them? And he goes, no, I'm going to send them back. I don't want to do that. I like doing the vintage stuff, the research, you know, the history of this, the history of that, the wood-burning VWs, you know, all that stuff. I don't want to do features. And I, well, and at the time, I was working a graveyard shift as a transit bus mechanic, which I hated. Oh, it was nasty, greasy, horrible, and ours stunk. And I, well, let me try. So he called up Henry and said, hey, I got this guy down here that wants to try. If not that, then I'm going to send him back to you. And Henry said, well, give him to him. You know, let's see what the guy's got. I mean, worst case scenario, I don't use what he did. The photographs are there. If I don't like what he did, then we won't run it, and he gets nothing for his time. Okay, well, you know, that's fair. So I wrote the story on the Thing from Tennessee. Didn't hear anything. Summer day, I had just gotten up. It was probably about 2 p.m, because I'm working graveyard. Mm-hmm. I get home at 7 and go to sleep. Go out to the mailbox, and here's an envelope from McMullen Argus Publishing. And it's a check for many hundreds of dollars. Whoa! Hey! And on the memo, it said Thing, Tennessee. So I started doing freelance for them for about a year. I was doing freelance in 96. And in 97, I happened to see Henry at a jamboree. And we were talking, and he goes, yeah, you know, everything's going good. Hey, what are you doing now for a real job? And I said, oh, I'm transit bus mechanic on a graveyard shift. He goes, do you like that? No, I freaking hate it. It's disgusting. I can't stand it. But I'm married. I got to make the house payment. I got to do this. And he goes, well, would you consider going to work for VW Trends as the tech editor? And I made him repeat it because I didn't think I heard him right. There's music and stingers going off at 4,500 RPM, and I don't have very good hearing anymore. Would you repeat that? And he goes, yeah, would you like to be the tech editor for VW Trends? Yeah. Yeah, actually, as a matter of fact, he goes, I can teach you how to photograph cars. Here's what I can't teach you. What size fender bolts do you use on a Bug? And I said, well, the 13 millimeter mainly, but the early cars had a 14 millimeter head. And he goes, that's what I can't teach you. And that was the question he asked me, was fender bolts. He knew the answer. He wanted to see if I did. And I did. He goes, I can teach you how to take pictures. I can't teach you what you have learned over the last 25 years about VWs. So he hired me. And that's when I became the tech editor for VW Trends. And funny enough, I lived in Escondido, and Dean Kirsten from Hot VWs lived in Vista. We were both tech editors for VW magazines living in North County, San Diego. There was even one time, I was still with Trends, he was with Hot VWs. We had both gone to a show in the Southeast that Walter Tate had put on, the IVWA. Well, I had the car show results, but I would email and call Walter and Cynthia Tate, and I could not get the drag race results. They just weren't sending them. And I mean, this is like 6-7 months later, and I'm going, you know, if I don't have this pretty soon, with a 3-month lead time, by the time I can write this and get it in the magazine, it's going to be time for the new one the week after this magazine comes out. It just confused people. So I was talking to Dean, and I said, yeah, you know, I'd like to write this story, but I can't get the drag racing results. And he goes, you've got the show results? And I said, yeah, why? And he goes, I can't get the show results. I've got the drag racing. So there is a town between Vista and Escondido called San Marcos, where VW Paradise is. We met at a hamburger stand, and I know it looked for the world like a drug deal. It was at night, and I kind of looking around, and here you go. And he handed me what I needed. I handed him what he needed. We both ran off and wrote our stories. So, you know, it was one of the, we had to do it. So, and Dean and I, yeah, we competed out there on the guardrail. Damn right we did. I would do everything in my power to steal a feature from him, and he would do it to me. But as soon as the cameras were put away, it was a drag race to see who could buy the other one the first beer. We ended up being good friends. I mean, how could you not? And we would go out to dinner at our favorite Chinese restaurant called the Bamboo House in Escondido. And Dean would bring his lovely lady, his wife, Kathy. And I'd bring my wife. And, you know, Dean had asked me, well, what are you doing for the cover this month? And if it was a red 67, I'd tell him it was a black oval, you know, and just, and he knew I wasn't going to tell him the truth. And he goes, so how are you liking VW Trends? And I said, you know, not a whole lot. There's just things going on that I don't like very much. And his wife goes, well, why don't you come to work with Dean at Hot VWs? And that was another one of those, excuse, would you repeat that, please? Well, Jeff Holyfield just left. Why don't you go to work for Dean at Hot VWs? And I looked at Dean and I go, what about that? And he goes, hey, maybe let me talk to Bruce, see what happens. So about a week later, I get a call from Dean going, hey, can you meet us at this lunch place in Costa Mesa at such and such a time? And I said, yeah. So I went and met Dean and RK and Bruce and Linda Dill and Steve Gutowski, who was the ad guy. Next day he calls and goes, so when do you want to start? And that, back in the early days of the internet, there was a forum called the Cowlook Forum, and that's where all the hot rod guys hung out. It was run by a fellow named John Plow in Canada. And boy, when they got wind of me defecting over to hot VWs, it was like I started a world war. And people were saying, well, how is VW Trends going to survive without Kafer Dave? Which, I, you know, was crazy. Of course they were gonna. But it caused quite a stir in the force. It made a lot of people kind of angry. I just thought they would be a better fit for me. And it was going to be a lot less damage control. I'll leave it at that.
So, I mean, not being around for VW Trends, what was the difference between VW Trends and hot VWs?
At the time, I would say hot VWs was more into the kind of the typical resto custom cowl look, Porsche Red 67s with a BRMs and 2276 and IDAs, where VW Trends was willing to think outside the box a little more. Vos rods, German look, little bit of patina car, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And they were willing to go outside the box because they knew there was no way they were going to beat hot VWs at their own game. You weren't going to do it. So we had to kind of like do an end run around hot VWs to, you know, see what we could do with it. And, the box, think outside the box. There's a good story. There was a guy who's now gone named Mark Herbert, and he had this car, and pardon my French internet, but it was called and still is the Super Shitbox. And this thing was a toilet with tires. And this thing was shag, nasty, ugly, four different colors of primer, Taco Bell wrappers in the back. The rear apron was made out of plywood. This thing was a toilet with tires.
Super Beetle?
No, this is 65, I believe.
Okay, so it's just the Super Shitbox. Okay.
Yeah. And he had the internals of the motor written on the roof panel by the window. You know what it had in it. This thing looked like it shouldn't even get out of the driveway. But on slicks, it ran low tens in the quarter mile. And so Ryan Price at the time was the boss, the editor of VW Trends, and said, we got to think outside the box. And, okay, outside the box. Oh, have I got a box for you? And I called Mark and said, we want to do a full-on four-page color feature on the Super Shit Box. And he goes, you're kidding me. And I said, no, we're serious as a heart attack, pal. We want to do it. And that was the same day we had him there at Irwindale Raceway with Muffler Mike Sheldon doing a story on, you know who Muffler Mike is?
I do not know.
Okay. He won Pro Eliminator, I think, 4 times in a row. He was, 4 years in a row. He was unbeatable. The guy was a machine with his car. Anyway, we had done that story, and we had done the Super Shit Box and Muffler Mike. We were just about finished, and Mike had his friend Jim Hagathorn there with a real nice red car with the turbo on it. And he said, I wonder if we can get like a synchronized burnout, you know, with both of you guys doing a gnarly smoky burnout at the same time. I don't know. So we tried it, and they had just repaved the infield at Irwindale. So they were hooking up, which is not what we wanted.
Right.
Mike, you got any ATF? And he goes, yeah, I got it. Give it here. Oh, yeah. If you ever see the cover of VW Trends, you will see a red 62 and a Bahama blue 63 ragtop. The whole back end is just engulfed in smoke. And that was on the cover. Well, that was the infamous twin burnout, Well, I mean, the thing's sending out smoke clouds like crazy. Sure enough, here comes Doug Stokes, the owner-manager of Irwindale Raceway, in his golf cart. He comes to the infield, and he looks, and the divots where they had literally worn a dip in
this new asphalt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and it's still steaming. Doug comes up and looks at it, and he goes, "What's that?" And I said, "Well, it's water." And he called me on that, and he goes, "No, it's not. I can smell it. That's ATF. You take you and your camera and your VW guys, and you get the hell out of here and don't ever come back." I went back later, but he didn't know it was me. Yeah. So, yes, I did get thrown out of Irwindale for that one, but it was a really cool cover.
And what year was this?
98, 99.
I was in elementary school. Okay. Sorry, Dave.
Well, if you find the VW Trans with two 90s. Cars doing a simultaneous burnout, and the story is called Fast Friends.
That's a story.
It's the truth.
That's the stuff of legends.
And then you know what Mid-America Motorworks is.
Obviously aware of MAM now.
Yeah. Yeah, they're a big advertiser, big parts seller in Illinois, Effingham, Illinois. Well, Mike Yeager owns it. Real nice guy. And he has a show out there every year, the Fun Fest. Well, he invited a guy that he was sponsoring his race car, Eric Madsen, who has a Karmann Ghia that will easily run in the eights. Easy run eights in the quarter mile. Well, he's out there and I'm out there, and I know him from all the drag strips and seeing him all around and stuff. Mm-hmm. I look at the car and go, "Hey, the key's in it." And he goes, "No, but you just hit that switch and push the button. There is no key. It's just a kill switch and the start button." Okay. So I get in the car, climb around the roll cage, flip the switch, hit the button, and the thing roars to life. And I look over at Eric, and he's, "Okay, whatever." Do not ever drive slicks in a spool, a locked transaxle, in the grass. It digs up the grass something terrible. And this was right in front of the corporate office of Mid-America Motorworks.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. And... the thing's so noisy, and I didn't know. And I looked over at Eric, and I could see kind of the panic in his eyes. His eyes got real wide, but I didn't know. I just knew the car was, you know, kind of hopscotching around a little bit. And after I parked it and got out, you could see all these divots where the grass is gone. And I look under Eric's car, and the whole back quarter panel is full of mud and grass. Oopsie. Well, I got most of it out from Eric's car, and I fessed up to Mike and said, "Yeah, Mike, I'm sorry. It seemed like a good idea at the time." And he just, "Well, I'll just have the gardener take care of it Monday, but don't do that again. I promise, never again, never." And I never did do that again. But he didn't throw me out. But, yeah, I should have known when I saw the look on Eric Madsen's eyes that something is not right. You know, what is wrong with this picture? Because he saw it throwing sod everywhere.
Well, I'm sure this car doesn't have mirrors. It's not.
It's a race car. It's,
you know, you can't see what's slick, going on behind spool. You. What's going on behind and you doesn't matter.
Exhaust pipes this long coming out of the turbo, you know, a foot long, and that's it. Yeah, you don't know what's going on. You're not supposed to be looking behind you anyway. Oops.
So, what was your most memorable story then?
Oh,
I'm a bit bold of me to presume that there's a more memorable story than these two. But I'm sure there's got to be one that was,
oh, golly,
super rare, super the I mean, my mind's going towards there's got to be a car that the odds were this car shouldn't be here today. you know, so, something like a pre-import, you know, pre-Hoffman car or...
I drove a Bill Collins' Hebmuller with no Kratz motor in it.
Tell me about that.
Well, Bill Collins was, he's kind of fallen off the face of the earth. He lives in New Hampshire, and he is a vintage guy all the way through. He even had a club called Der Käfer Fahrer, which was the bug drivers, pre-57, and you had to put on at least 1,500 miles a year to be in the club. And they'd check. Well, he's had a fall foliage tour where all these guys get together and they drive around Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, looking at all the fall colors. And he asked me to come, and I said, yeah, well, you know, I don't think the rental car is going to be a pre-57. And he goes, no, you can drive my sunroof. It was a 53 Zwitter sunroof with Okrasa heads and carbs and Porsche brakes. That was fun. That little thing thought it was a 1600 with cadrons. It did real well for itself. But that was fun. Doing the wheelie off with Clyde Berg was a ton of fun. We were at Bugarama, and Clyde was there, and Muffler Mike was there, and they're both known for their outrageous on-the-bumper wheel stance. And I know them both pretty well, and I said, hey, you know what we ought to do? We ought to have a wheelie off. See who can do the best wheelie. So we did, and I don't remember. There's a picture of it in Hot VW's. Or, I mean, excuse me, VW Trends, Freudian slip. And it's all over the internet. If you just look up wheelie off, you'll probably see it. Mm-hmm. But I think it was Clyde got the hang time award and Mike got the altitude award. I think Mike went higher up, but I think Clyde carried it further. But I took... I got a shot of both of them, and then I have a picture in the offices of Clyde's car, and he's doing his patented Clyde wheelie. Well, there's a helmet on the passenger side. Some dork from VW Trends is, I wasn't ready for this. Looking at all, he had decals, VW stickers for a headliner in his mm-hmm. car. And I said, take me for a ride, take me for a ride. Well, I don't have a seat, I don't have a seat. Well, finally one day at Bugarama, he brought a seat with him and a seat belt. Yes, okay. So the guy, we go pulling up and the track Nazi goes, you can't have him in this. Yeah, well, he's belted in, he's got a helmet. So the track guy goes, all right, well, run 14s. Do not go into the 13s. Don't do it. Well, like Clyde's going to stay in the in the 14s? No. You know Clyde? Clyde Berg? Yeah, he's going to stay in the 14s. Right. So he stands on it, puts the wheels up in the air, scares the hell out of me, but hell of a good ride, lots of fun. Ran like a 12-0-something, which of course got him tossed, but... the event was over. I mean, you know, everything was done. People mm-hmm. were leaving, so
throwing him out of the bar at 1:45 in the morning.
Yeah, or at 1:55 in the morning. It, you know, there's no harm, no foul, and that was a lot of fun. I've had so much fun doing all that. There were some times that weren't all that great that I don't talk about because it would serve no purpose.